Marsha. Same problem as yesterday.
Hello.
Okay. Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Vudale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tanamini. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharini Nirvisheshunyavadi Paschachade Satarini Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Sri Prabhupada Ki Jai. So we were mentioning in the last few days how after covering various aspects of the Varnashrama mission, trying to bring out and analyze some of the basic principles or concepts relating to Varnashrama Dharma, and how this was linked very closely, very intimately with the whole concept of traditional education, and how within our own ISKCON society, of course, the area of education, actually both the area of education and also Varnashrama from the very beginning, were very much emphasized from the very beginning, also introduced by Srila Prabhupada. And for various reasons, we could say that actually both of these two areas, Varnashrama and education, specifically, let's say, traditional education or in terms of Gurukul education, we still have a lot to do to come up and meet the expectations given by Srila Prabhupada. And we pointed out a little bit how there didn't seem to be at present within our ISKCON society an organized arrangement or system to specifically address or zero in on the whole question of Varnashrama. Many, you know, various conferences have been started over the years on the internet, various discussions back and forth, which often have brought out more confusion than clarity, isn't it? Sambha Prabhu was involved in various of these exchanges, and actually was one of the main or major contributors to such dialogue. And actually many good things came out, but it's like nothing really, you know, where do we go, what do we do with all of this, you see? And also some issues were left unresolved and difficult to address. In the year 2000, I had an opportunity, although I tried for many years, to finally have my request for resignation as a temple president, because I was supposed to serve only for a few years somehow or other. You know, you end up sometimes much longer in certain situations or certain places than you were planning. Anyways, year 2000, I was able to spend four full-time years in Indonesia, where although I had traveled there before, it was more of an opportunity to concentrate, to zero in a lot more on the whole idea of Varnashrama. And it was during those years in Indonesia that this idea of trying to present something, trying to formulate some kind of vehicle or mechanism by which the whole Varnashrama issue could be addressed. We have seen, for example, how within our own, within our ISKCON society, in order to address different areas, for example, book distribution, Srila Prabhupada, at one particular point, you know, felt, well, we need to establish the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, you know, because it's like a very specific and specialized area. Then Srila Prabhupada established, you know, Bhaktivedanta Institute, because also specialized preaching to the scientists, more, you know, academic kind of persons. In this way, we see that certain areas which required more detailed attention and maybe more specialized attention sometimes would require some kind of structure, either within ISKCON or like parallel to ISKCON or connected with ISKCON, like that. You see, Prabhupada, for example, mentioned, well, I'm establishing the BBT to make sure that my books are going to be published, that they will continue to be printed and distributed, even though ISKCON may encounter some difficulties, at least the books, because in the overall, this was the order he had received. Srila Prabhupada had received this order from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that if you ever get any money, you distribute books. And even Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, at one point, we all know, had mentioned how, well, you know, ever since we started to build these big temples, and especially some of the more opulent marble temples, it better we sell all the marble and just, you know, print books and preach. You see, preaching is like the most important. So, with various, I mean, with this in mind, I formulated something which I coined as will be actually a whole day is kind of connected with this theme, the Global Varnashram Educational Social Cultural Organization, which basically initially was like a website. The whole idea was to put something on the website, give some, you know, very specific mission statement with supporting objectives. You know, I contacted different devotees in different countries to get some ideas and some feedback and, you know, some some of their thoughts, and then formulated that, and we started the website. Initially, although the name was like organization, basically it was a website, year 2002. So that went on for a few years, although I must say that, you know, it was slow to develop for, you know, a number of reasons. No one was really able to give like full-time attention to it, etc. I, during that time, formulated or wrote various articles which, you know, we developed the whole concept of the eight petal, which we'll be showing actually later on also, which address the four varnas, right? The four varnas and the four asramas. And they kind of like gradually evolved. And then what happened is that I had an opportunity, I came in contact with, I was always in contact with our devotees here in India, and then some opportunity for land, because in Indonesia we actually started, you know, encouraging devotees to get some land, you know, I mean, to develop Varnashram. It means, as we have been hearing the last few days, to get some land so that you can keep cows and, you know, start building families. And we had started, we covered that briefly the other day, one particular, our first major project in Indonesia on the island of Sumatra, 1999, and we were getting some good results. And then some other projects, some other devotees came forward, and like this, we have, you know, about six projects in Indonesia alone, which are at different levels. So the opportunity to get some land came here in South India. And then so I encourage different devotees, and this is actually an important theme which will be coming out later on in our discussions this morning, specifically in regards to recommendations. We were encouraging devotees to formulate different recommendations in the whole context of Varnashrama and how we could implement that. So with this opportunity of getting some lands and some devotees who, with whom I've been working for some time, they were quite positive and enthusiastic. They had some, you know, basic understanding of Varnashrama, and so they, you know, we pulled our resources together and this land was purchased. But in order to purchase this land, because this is an important theme, which may be somewhat controversial, actually not may be, is controversial, and something important we need to discuss today and in the future also. It's an issue which I would say is very fundamental to the whole implementation of Varnashrama Dharma. And that has to do with, well, you know, who's going to own the land, you know. And so I recommended to these devotees, you form a trust, you know. And then you register that, you form a trust and you give it that name, Glovesco. You have to give it a name. Already Glovesco was there, already that mission statement was there, the objectives and supporting objectives, etc. like that. So that's what the devotees did, devotees who are, you know, residents. I was not in India at the time, I still could not come back to India. So, and also different countries, as we know, it's those who are from the country generally who can own land and like that. So, in this way, there's a small project in the state of Karnataka where about 14 acres of land was registered, and where we kind of envision as like a place where Varnashram concepts and principles, just like here this year we're having a seminar on Varnashram. So we envision and plan, we're planning to have seminars, you know, ongoing during the year at different times. Not only seminars, but also to demonstrate, you know, when you have 14 acres of land and you have some devotees living there and you have some cows and you have some, you know, products, gardens and whatnot, you can actually demonstrate directly. Not only the theory can be there, but also the practice. Both are very important. So, I came back to India actually after quite a long absence of 15 years in year 2006. And so as I mentioned before, 2005 is when we got this land. And because Varnashram matters are like somewhat nebulous and certain principles have not been established, so that became a little controversial, you see. It's like 2 days ago, one devotee, I think it was Chaitanya, Rido Chaitanya Prabhu, not this one, the other one, from Radha Desh. He had mentioned after seeing the documentary that was shown by our Varnashram research team, right? He was mentioning, this is, you know, he appreciated the documentary and he was mentioning this would be very good to present, you know, to our leaders, to our RGB, you know, regional governing bodies, which are established like on different continents. So when I came back to India Of course, you know, the Glovesco thing has been still very much, I would say, I mean, we've been, of course, quite upfront in terms of the website, but otherwise we've been keeping a low profile, so to speak. And I mean, the whole reason or purpose why we're presenting or trying to formulate is to somehow or other assist, you know, our society in developing or getting some better, clear understanding of the whole concept of Varnashrama and how we can proceed and, you know, move forward on this whole dimension. So, what I'd like to do, there's a number of things actually connected with Glovesco. In many ways, this documentary, this whole seminar that we're holding today, and part of our presentation this morning will be actually given by Harsha, who's on my extreme left here. He's been very, very much involved in not only himself, but with a team of about 15, 20 devotees in Andhra Pradesh, Secunderabad, in developing various programs, doing various kinds of research, which fit in with the whole, you know, Glovesco mission and secondary objectives. So he will give a little bit of background information on that after my brief presentation. This is what we'll cover, let's say, in this first module. The second one will be, we mentioned in the last few days, how it's important to formulate some proposals, and we're looking forward to some feedback, some ideas from your side as well. Already we have about 10 proposals, which I'll be sharing with all of you a little bit later on. So if I may, I'd like to put on our screen the mission statement of what we call Glovesco. Glovesco, keep in mind, is just like Varnashram. Yeah, this is the mission statement. Yeah, just keep it up. Mission statement: to help promote and establish the universal concepts and principles of Varnashrama Dharma for the benefit of all individuals in society. This can best be realized within an agrarian-based social structure through culture, family, education, and devotion. We try to cover, you know, as widely as possible, and emphasize also the agrarian aspect, which we've talked about a lot in the last few days, how, you know, the whole Vedic culture is based on land, cultivation of land, protection of cows, like that. So, what are some of the goals, mission goals? Number one, to establish local, regional, national, and continental Varnashram educational steering committees for the purpose of promoting Varnashrama Dharma. Number two, to help set up models or micro units of Varnashrama communities, villages, where the principles of Varnashrama Dharma and Vaishnava Dharma will be promoted through Varnashrama colleges. Number three, to locate and secure suitable land. Here it's not, actually, why suitable land is in capital. In the original text, it's actually brought out as the main idea, let's say, of that particular statement, and it's in color also. But anyways, I think everyone can pick up on that. To locate and secure suitable land for the purpose of establishing such Varnashrama communities and for promoting the ideology of Varnashrama Dharma. Number four, to demonstrate in a practical way how the principles of Varna, categories of occupational engagement, and Ashrama, categories of spiritual practice, are universal principles, the essence of which are found in all the major religious faiths, such as Muslim, Hindu, Christian, Buddhist, Jewish, etc. In other words, Varnashrama Dharma is not simply a thing for the Hindus. Those who understand what is behind it, and our goal and purpose is to actually be able to successfully communicate and even work closely with individuals or communities which may have a different belief possibly, but can appreciate the basic principles. And then number five, to recruit and train qualified teachers in the various arts, sciences, and other fields of knowledge for the purpose of teaching at the Varnashrama College and communities. Six, to demonstrate the principles of self-sufficiency, sustainability, and localized economy following the principles of Varnas and Ashramas. Seven, to systematically and methodically conduct seminars and workshops which will provide training and education in all Varnas and Ashramas. I think it finishes at 10. So number 8, to compile, publish, and distribute literatures, pamphlets, booklets, etc. for the sake of informing and educating people in general about Varnashrama Dharma. Number 9, to establish educational curriculum designs and define other educational guidelines for the Varnashrama colleges. And 10, to demonstrate a more natural and simple lifestyle based on the principles of God consciousness, keeping the traditional family unit as a nucleus and the basis for healthy, peaceful, progressive communities. So there's a series of supporting objectives. I'll just read them very quickly. To recruit members from different communities interested in helping realize the above-mentioned mission statement and mission goals. To help revive interest in India's ancient teachings of the Vedic epic Mahabharata, Ramayana through... Well, I was in India, I mean Indonesia. Wayan is very popular. Wayan means puppet plays and whatnot. Art, music, dance, etc. Number 3, to establish school, colleges, etc. Which will help all help manifest and develop the concepts of Varnashrama Dharma. 4, to raise funds for such projects, etc., etc. I mean, the very basic things that go along with practically, you know, any organization. So of course that's important. 6, to give respect, this is directly from the Srimad Bhagavatam, isn't it? Bhagavatam underlines how 6 members of the society need special attention, special protection. Then number 7, to promote organic natural farming based on concepts of sustained agriculture, avoiding modern destructive chemicals which create ecological imbalances in nature, etc. Protect the environment. Number 9, to work closely with other educational, etc. like that. 10, to demonstrate principles of simple living and high thinking. Yeah. 11, foster individuals in individuals and society at large a need for strong character formation, as we heard yesterday from Preeti Vardhana Prabhu. It's like one of the basic foundations of Gurukul. Promote research. Number 12, in ancient village traditions. We heard yesterday from Madhava Prabhu, for example, how so many of the traditional ways of just doing very simple things are gone, or, you know, are being lost. So it's very, this is one important thing they're doing right now, is they're going to villages and, you know, bringing out things that have been like thrown out in a corner and people are not using anymore, or finding this, as he mentioned yesterday, finding one person who had learned something like some 40 years ago and then was able to, you know, revive that particular art, you know, of making oil, for example. I mean, such simple, basic things, but if you don't have them, I mean, we cannot properly establish, let's say, Varnashrama. And then, yes, number 14, yeah, 13, interfaith dialogue. I mean, we want to bring this to the whole world. Number 14, to encourage individuals like that to take up the spiritual practice and to introduce and help establish Varnashrama Dharma and colleges within all religious and humanitarian communities. So, yeah, okay, I think that's sufficient. The website which we have established, and we'll be covering some of this as we go along today, One thing I should mention right away, we can put the lights on possibly, is that whenever we deal with any kind of organization, I mean, naturally some various apprehensions will be there. One most important concept in relation to varnashram or in relation to self-sufficiency is the whole idea of what is called self-governance. I have some very interesting quotes which I'd like to read also this morning, either in this first or the second module. We all know how Srila Prabhupada spoke of village organization, isn't it? In the Bhagavatam, I mean the conversations especially. And he refers a lot to Gandhi, because Gandhi was very much into villages. And some really powerful quotes are there which underline and bring out some most important concepts which most of us are unaware of. And it's very difficult for us to understand this when we continue to live the way we are presently. And when we continue, I would say, to develop a, somewhat restricted and limited temple formula consciousness. In other words, our ISKCON society up to now largely has been established and has been working, managing within the temple situation, mostly in the cities also. When we deal with a community outside of the city, like in a village situation, we're dealing with different laws, so to speak. The mechanism is somewhat different. And one of the important elements has to do with what is called becoming localized, becoming self-governed as well. So in other words, the reason I mentioned this, one of the reasons, is that this organization, Glovesco, I mean, it could be called some other name, the name is secondary, in no way is it an endeavor or an attempt to micromanage or to centralize. Rather, it is wanting to facilitate, provide information, provide opportunities, provide funds, possibly also if funds are available, for those who will appreciate and understand the need of developing Varnashrama on this kind of scale. And anyone who is serving within this organization, so to speak, sees himself or herself as a facilitator, you know, assistant, so that individuals or groups of individuals can learn, pick up what largely has been spoken or presented by Srila Prabhupada himself. One of the recommendations we will make actually is that within our ISKCON society, we need to establish something very concrete, which may be similar to what we have done. In other words, it's an area that, for whatever reason, has not been done. So, to a large extent, you know, I mean, not only myself, but with some other individuals, we've gone ahead to try and address this problem and try to provide information. And as I mentioned earlier, we're able to put up this seminar here because we've been developing this whole ideology, so to speak. So ideology is actually nothing really new. It is all there in Prabhupada's books. It is there in the Vedic literatures, etc. But, you know, somebody has to bring it together, present it, and in this way get it across to different devotees. You will all recall how in the beginning when we started the seminar, and I think we, as we progress through the different modules, we see how Varnashrama as a concept and the whole work involved for implementing Varnashrama Dharma, keeping in mind also that it is, right, the PowerPoint we were showing about the four movements, keeping in mind that actually it's one of the four main movements. And Maharaj was mentioning the other day also, I believe it was Maharaj, was pointing out how Srila Prabhupada had mentioned that 50% of his mission, somebody mentioned, was left, still to be done. 50% means of establishing Varnashrama. Of course, that statement has been debated at different times by, but then I was pointing out that, if 50%, if we have difficulty with that, we have to understand that at least it's 25%. I was mentioning that the other day. One out of four is 25%, if I remember my mathematics correctly. So, means it's something very major, and it is very, very vast and very, because it encompasses so much. And just one point, in case it doesn't come to my mind later on, is that Varnashrama Dharma, or the implementation of Varnashrama, as we are discussing in the last few days, does not in any way exclude, the holy name, or building of temples, or congregational preaching. This fourth dimension, this fourth movement, or this fourth wave of our ISKCON society, or of the Sankirtan movement, includes very much, because it cannot be separated. And that is why those who may be involved in, let's say, especially books and Harinam and books, which is like the first, division, or those who may be involved especially in building temples or deity worship, and those who may be involved in various congregational programs, whether it's youth program, Namhata program, etc., should not feel that this is something in any way, not including or competing or whatever, It's like, it's meant to be, actually should be seen, and it's important for us to develop this understanding and vision that it's a natural kind of sequence. Yeah. It's like, you take step number one, then after two, then three, then four. Then it's a complete thing. It's a complete unit. So this may take some time to actually understand, but it's a very important point, that just like Srila Prabhupada, somebody was mentioning that the other day also, that is there in Srila Prabhupada's instructions. When we are based, when devotees are there in the villages, then it's not that you're just going to be sitting around and playing cards like people do in villages. But you're going to, once you're established, once you have your basic necessities met, then you're going to go on your bullock cart, Prabhupada says, 10 kilometers this way, that way, northeast, south, and west, with some books and mridanga and cartels, and you're going to preach the holy name. You're going to preach to surrounding villages. And if there's no one to preach to, then you'll just have festivals, whatever. So, in other words, Prabhupada very much envisioned that our devotees also within villages, within these communities, they will continue to practice these different activities. This is, mentioned in the mission statement regarding agrarian life. I would like to take a few minutes to bring out some very, very important quotations from Srila Prabhupada and also from Gandhi, because Prabhupada, does refer to Gandhi's interest and understanding of how villages need to be preserved, right? So we have a short PowerPoint on this, which I'd like to show. You don't have it either. I'll just copy it for you. So if we can just hang in there one small second. Where's your...
One thing that's very unknown is we all know that Prabhupada was criticizing Gandhi as far as he's not taking the teaching of Bhagavad Gita and all that. There are other instances when Prabhupada was speaking about villages, they said for that alone. So he was appreciating Gandhi's whole idea of keeping the culture. So we have to understand, it's not that he was rejecting everything about Gandhi. He was just saying that Gandhi was not putting it properly in Krishna's service. In that sense, he was rejecting as a Mahatma, like he's considered.
Prabhupada also said that
You have the court. Not that we don't believe you.
It's on my court. I say so confidently because
none of them. Okay. Important course like that, it's good to try and.
or,
yeah.
yeah. There are also some elements we have to get because there are also some elements in Gandhi that differ from the Vedic standard, even in his village organization. Broadly, yes.
So here we go. Village. Yeah, somebody can kindly close this so we can get better. Village organization. We just put this together on a PowerPoint yesterday. I've only covered some selected quotes from Srila Prabhupada and also M. Gandhi. There's also important quotes from Manu Samhita. Okay. This is a letter, 1968. Nobody should take to very hardship labor. It's a very important point. Prabhupada also mentions not more than 8 hours of work a day. The modern civilization has discovered severe types of dangerous industries and laborers are attracted for high wages, but they should not accept such work. Interesting, no? Prabhupada is telling we shouldn't work in that kind of environment. We shouldn't accept this kind of work. Then naturally, there will be less capitalist idea because the labor cooperates. Therefore, demoniac persons, they take advantage and make unnecessary increase of artificial demands of the body. You see? So it means when we as devotees continue to, you know, go along with the whole situation, we're kind of like becoming accomplice of it. Yeah. Then, in the same letter actually, better one should be satisfied with agricultural produce than go into large cities to be engaged in industry. I mean, that's a pretty clear statement, you know. Peaceful life depending on agricultural produce can bring him real happiness and prosperity, not otherwise. The more persons will be satisfied at their home with home economics, not to go outside the home, that is peaceful life. In India, Mahatma Gandhi tried to organize villages in that way so that not to drag the people to the town. The last portion of the same letter. So peaceful atmosphere can be attained only when there is large-scale village organization, actually village life. Not to borrow the ideas from the cities in the village life, as people are doing nowadays, isn't it? Poet Cooper said that country is made by God and the cities and towns are made by man. So that is the distinction. In another conversation, 1974, the easiest way to manage them is to have everything more or less in small villages. Prabhupada replies, yes, that was Gandhi's philosophy, village organization. These people, they are attracting villagers to work in the factory and they are exploiting them. Instead of producing food, they are attracted by so-called high salaries to the factory, and they're producing bolts and nuts, motor parts, and that famous, you know, article, you can't eat nuts and bolts, right? Then, 1974, same. Our philosophy is that you produce your food anywhere. You stay and keep cows, take milk, produce vegetables, food grains, and chant, sorry about that, Hare Krishna. That's all. That is our philosophy. Make your life successful. Forgot to change the font on this one.
Huh?
Kanaya. Okay, well, you have transcendental vision. That's okay. 1975, point 10. The Manava Dharma. Interesting, Prabhupada speaks about Manava Dharma mission. At one particular point, its constitution and program. Therefore, the constitution of Manava Dharma or the institution of Varnasrama must be interesting for the whole world and it should be exemplified by practical demonstration. The immediate program should be village organization as Mahatma Gandhi contemplated. 1975, one guest is saying, like poverty and this lack of balance between rich and poor, how these problems can be solved? That Gandhi wanted to solve it, but you rejected. Gandhi wanted them to village organization. Another letter. Your proposal for cooperation with ISKCON is welcome. I very much appreciate your proposal. The mass problem at the present moment in India is actually a food problem. I have therefore decided to start some village organization program, namely, people should be invited to live in the village, produce their own foodstuff, grains, fruits, and vegetables, maintain a sufficient number of cows to get a large quantity of milk, produce their own cloth, eat sumptuously for keeping fit and health, and then they can regularly sit down and chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. 1976, now we are in the process of making a brochure so that we can present to trusts and foundations for bigger donations for the farm project. Prabhupada, that's nice. They have amassed money. Let them spend for this village organization. This is real Gandhi's program. He wanted this village organization. But because they manufactured their own way, it was not successful. But if we follow this principle, it will be successful without any doubt. These big, big ashramas. Gandhi's ashrama is vacant now. No. They are getting money, but they have no such program. In Mayapur, here we are in Mayapur. Oh, that's in New Mayapur, sorry. New Vrindavan is on the rocks and hills, and this is plain. Therefore, situation is better. That New Orleans is also plain land. You have been there, and Pennsylvania is also. Pennsylvania is very good, Hari Sari mentions, Prabhupada, but it doesn't matter. Our purpose will be served anywhere. So try to concentrate in this village organization life. Full of anxieties, city life. The house already there, if you repair them nicely, then it is a very nice place. They're gradually being repaired. Then Prabhupada, 76. I have seen Gandhi wanted to organize a program, village. Gandhi's program was very nice. Village organized so that they may not come to the city and help the capitalists. So most of us are in the cities. What are we doing? Helping the capitalists. remain satisfied in the village. But where is that satisfaction? That is a failure. In order to serve the massive people, to bring them to the ideal position, we should try to introduce this vanashrama. Not that we're going to be candidates of vanashrama. It is not our business. But to teach them how the world will be in peaceful position, we have to introduce. Here is a very nice institution for the benefit of the whole human society. In other conversations, Prabhupada would say that we're not going to be necessarily caught up. That has to be understood properly, I mean, in this statement. We have to show by example. You see, we have to show by example how a society is going to be managed and directed. We can come back to this point possibly. These are a few quotes from Gandhi that Prabhupada is referring to, as we have just seen. In the future setup, we shall have only two things, the villages in the world. We may have the names of countries on the map for the sake of convenience, but in reality, there will be no intermediary between the world and the village. All the authority concerning the material side of life will rest with the village. The village will have power to order its own life. The experience of mankind testifies to the fact. Actually, this is a statement not only made by Gandhi, but various, you know, influential persons, intellectuals in the West also. The experience of mankind testifies to the fact that the collective life is more genial, varied and fruitful when it is concentrated in small units and simpler organizations. It is only small units which have had the most intense life. Collective life diffusing itself in vast areas would be wanting in cohesiveness and productiveness. Ancient Greek city, states and village republics of India provided specimen for all-round development of rich and puissant life. Pandit Jawaharlal Nehru wrote, "This system of village self-government was the foundation of the Aryan polity. It was this that gave it strength. So jealous were the village assemblies of their liberties that it was laid down that no soldier was to enter a village except with a royal permit." And this is the last quote, as late, or one of the last quotes, as late as 1830, British Governor of India, Sir Charles Metcalfe, described the village communities as follows. The village communities are little republics, having nearly everything they want within themselves and almost independent of foreign relations. They seem to last where nothing else lasts. This union of the village communities, each one forming a separate little state in itself, is in a high degree conducive to their happiness and to the enjoyment of a great portion of freedom and independence. I think one or two more. Independence must begin at the bottom. Thus, every village will be a republic or panchayat, having full powers. It follows, therefore, that every village has to be self-sustained and capable of managing its affairs, even to the extent of defending itself against the whole world. I want to resuscitate the village. This is Gandhi speaking. I want to resuscitate the villages of India. Today our villages have become a mere appendage to the cities. They exist, as it were, to be exploited by the latter and depend on the latter's sufferance. I am convinced that if India is to attain true freedom, and through India, the world also, then sooner or later the fact must be recognized that people will have to live in villages, not in towns, in huts, not in palaces. Crores of people will never be able to live at peace with each other in towns and palaces. They will then have to no recourse but to resort to both violence and untruth. Hare Krishna. Samana Sumita, there's a whole section on preservation by governance, but we don't have the quotes on that. Okay, we can have some lights again, please. Interesting quotes, and I would say very important quotes by both Srila Prabhupada and Gandhi, and is very much in line with the whole idea of, you know, we may say, well, you know, we're devotees, this is Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, because that comes up all the time, you know, what do we have to do with all of this? But actually, we should understand that this is part of what, I mean, this is very much part of Dharma. It's the foundation of Dharma. Because if we don't have this, like it is presently the current situation, who's looking after the cows? In India itself, this statistic came to my attention just recently. Every single day, 50,000 cows are slaughtered. What is it? Anyways, yeah. So, what to speak of all over the world? And anyways, we touched on this a little bit before. before presenting or giving the opportunity for Harsha to speak about. What is it? Varnashram support? Huh? Varnashram? Yeah, yeah, okay. Whether anyone has any question on this so far? Yes? Well, it's hard to answer that. I mean, it's hard to give an answer to something that's vague.
What you mean is variegated, right? I'll give you one good example. You have a farm in the heavy and near a town called Heavy, and there is very pious Indian gentleman who is only a shoe factory. He's a pious man, Hindu, and very fairly modest member of RSS and so many things. He organized free yoga classes for his employees, and he's a good boss and a good pious gentleman. So he invited us to visit his factory. There's nothing sinful about cashews, right? He's taking cashews and repacking them and sending them all around the world. Then we came to this room where there was about 100 girls sitting there, young girls, with a knife. skinning the inner skin of the cashew, one cashew by one. Yeah, so one cashew, two cashew, three cashew.
Thank you.
Yeah. So it means that then it struck me, I felt so compassion. My God, this girl's life. 6 days a week, 8 hours a day. She's a cashew girl. That's what she does. And probably for many years until she's married or whatever. And then even with such a, you can say a pious industry, it's cashew, but it's not like chemicals or selling meat, it's just cashew. Even that is so alienating. And every job in the city is like that. If you're an accountant, you push a pen all day and you make subtraction and addition. If you're a computer man, you're always in front of the screen doing practically the same thing over and over and over again. For most people, you're a businessman. When in the village, 1 week you work on the fence, 1 week you do the garden, in the rainy season you make the furniture. The work is always different. It's not alienating. You know? So you don't get so tired of it. Because it always changes. It's kind of...
It's also like reading or dramas maybe also.
Yeah.
I thought about television and it was... There's no television.
Television?
Television is to be variegated. Everybody in the whole city is all sitting in front of the TV for 8 hours every night. I don't think that's variegated.
Actually, one point is that, and we see when one spends a little bit of time in some village, from morning till evening, there are things to do. You know, I mean, if somebody's a little bit responsible, village people, there's always, but they need to be guided also. They need to be guided, but that kind of variegatedness is actually, there is variety also in the cities. You know, there's all kinds of attractions and whatnot, distractions, but the kind of variety that one finds in village life in connection with maintaining the house or cultivating the land, protecting the land, protecting the produce or the foods that is more healthy, more conducive for, you know, because it's, yeah, more natural also. Excuse me. Yeah, we have to keep time at the time factor here, and Maharaj, regarding village, some of these quotes, for example, that we have seen, or the whole idea of Varnashrama being intimately connected or based on agrarian lifestyle, whether you have any comments on that or anything that you might like to. Seems like, you know, traditionally that was how people, even now in many places as well. Any comments, or if not, it's okay. Yeah.
In the beginning, human civilization was agriculture. It was not, there were no industries and the factories for both and not. Of course, at the present moment, it's very difficult because we have degenerated, we have left the two parts. So, Varnashrama is a difficult thing. We have to learn about it. In Africa, our occupation is farming. In Africa, we are all farmers. So, most of the things we are discussing is not new to me because we are born into it and we know about it. So, we are artificially living life these days. We have taken ourselves very far away from nature, from the skyscraper. That is bird life, not human life, not civilization. Of course, in the beginning, the skyscraper started because people were looking for land, there was no space. It's not that it was a civilization. These days we are taking it to be civilization, but those days it was because of space. People have no space. In Africa we have a lot of land, so there was no need for skyscrapers. When we left Mother Earth and have gone too high, the result is that we are lacking so many things. The health problem is there. The food also is lacking. And so many inauspicious things are happening. But if we come very close to nature by taking to agriculture, and we solve all our problems and we live a very simple life and have time to think about God and perfect our life and go back home, back to Godhead.
Yes, Madhavapur. Can I mention a few things about there was an essay and a very famous one called Fall of the Roman Empire, and there are several studies being done on it. Initially they say that Rome was actually seven families which were cultivating land around them, but they had very distinct culture. They had written down codes of religion, they had written down codes of law and social behavior and things like that. They were all written down. They had written language, they had written their definite religious practices, and each family had that. So that's how Rome became a center for culture. And slowly it started growing. As it started growing, it also started taking over its agricultural land. And as it started taking over its agricultural land, then there was a shortage of food. So that's where the expansionism of Rome started. And once Rome started expanding like that, and it went right up to Egypt and other places to get food for Rome, basically, a lot of times. And what happened in Rome was that there were a lot of people who were in Rome who didn't have enough engagement, as you were saying. And because there were not enough engagement of the people in Rome, at least for major part of the time, so then the whole entertainment industry came. And the government had to promote entertainment so as to keep the people in Rome busy. As in India, I don't know about the other parts of the world, at least in India, when there's severe economic or some social problem or political problem, the government organizes cricket matches so that all the people are diverted towards that. So this is the whole group of entertainers and entertainment industry actually comes about when there's lack of agriculture, proper engagement. So village organization, it was actually Rome was a village organization which gradually developed because of culture. And drawing a parallel to it, some of the best lands of today, some of the cities of today are actually based on some of the best lands of agricultural lands of India. Bombay in about 1780s and 1850s and 1860s was called the Mahim Gardens. It's first class Bagayat land, very wonderful land, Bagayat land. In Gujarat, Nadiad, Saurashtra and Nadiad. Today, Saurashtra, there is not a single river. They are diverting, they're damming the Narmada and shifting it to the, diverting the waters to Saurashtra. In 1780s, I think, or 1760s or 1750s, there's a written report by a British agriculture officer who said there were seven rivers in that area. Today it's an arid area. So what has happened is that, and secondly I come again to other places like Pune. Pune is the best agricultural land in Maharashtra. It's the best agriculture, isn't it? It's the best agricultural land in whole of Maharashtra. Similarly Nasik. But now these are becoming metropolis. The town where we stay, we are based, Belgaum, is one of the best agricultural land. In fact, Belgaum used to supply vegetables to three cities at the same time. Today, these agricultural lands are turning into, and then we are being pushed to bad areas which were not formerly good agricultural areas to do agriculture in those areas. For example, we are pushed 40 kilometers down, which is a hilly area which was never cultivated. So therefore, production is going down. Food scarcity is increasing. A lot of idle people are coming up in the cities. And to keep them busy, and with so many things, so-called education and entertainment is being provided to them to keep them busy. So this is going on again and again. Belgaum, another example, Bangalore. Bangalore was called the garden city of India. Today there are no gardens for sure. Then, I don't know about the other city, I don't know so much about Calcutta. Calcutta was nothing till the British came in. Similarly, most of the places which have developed into centers of civilization were actually one of the best growing lands of the world. And now the world is going to face a severe crisis because we are growing cities in these places. Yes.
Come in. Tried out fuel made from vegetables in an airplane. Fuel made from vegetable oil. They just tried it out in an airplane the other day to try to kind of, you know, get away from the oil. You know, the oil prices are rising. But what's happening is that more and more they're using cropland for fuel production. So there's even less cropland for food. So, you know, it's just becoming completely crazy.
And thus, so many crops. It takes 17 vegetable protein to make one animal protein. So as the meat industry is increasing, it's a 17 to 1 loss. So 17 crops are turning to one, like the equivalent of one crop, because we're feeding soya to the animals that we're growing just to kill.
Can I make one statistics?
Before the British came to India, and French and the British came to India, the British army and the French army was crisscrossing the country. Before that, there was very strict records of agricultural production in India. And the production in the very good records have been kept in the Tanjore, Kingdom of Tanjore, the Tanjore district at present of Tamil Nadu. But the Tanjore kings had kept very excellent agricultural records of the area, and that goes back to about 200 to 300 years. And if you see the average, yield in certain districts of Tanjore, especially they've taken one particular example of Ramnathapuram district, which is a semi-arid area of Tamil Nadu. There the production of rice per hectare was 20 tons. Today, 1 hectare. They used to produce 20 tons per hectare.
Per crop or per year?
Per year. Per year, 20 tons.
How many crops?
Two or three.
Probably three.
Yeah. So, today in the same place, the maximum production is just about coming up to 1 ton.
Yes.
Annual production. So, this is the situation that has happened in India. I mean, there even in these parts of India, there are records which are there.
So this is due to the decrease of the number of cows and the number of cow dung that have been put in the land also?
Well, there are several people have analyzed it in several ways. One is the governance had changed. And the British, the crown, was not really bothered about the production. They started extracting taxes in terms of money, not in terms of kind. So the farmers were forced to grow something which they can sell and get some money which they can convert into tax and give it to the government. So this is one of the major reasons of the change. And secondly, most of the previous kings and kingdoms, what they did was they came and it became a part of, even including the Muslim rule, or the, I wouldn't say the Muslim, the Turks and the Pathans and the Mughal rule, they became a part of India. Whereas when the British and the French and the Portuguese came, what they did is they actually took everything from here to there. They never really cared for the soil and the production and the land. So they just were trying to extract things from here. And also a lot of destruction of forest.
Why then so many people leaving the village, if you said people who were living in the villages, they're leaving now and going to the cities. So what is missing?
There are various things, Krishna. In the case that Prabhuji was mentioning there, that the emphasis went more on money. You need money to survive, and the money's in the cities. People want to go to the cities for the money, and also for the gadgets, for the things. People are losing the, because there's no Krishna. There's because Krishna is not there, therefore they're looking for, you know, sense gratification in the form of things, money. Then no one wants to be on the land. They think that's backwards. And it's a lack of education. It's a lack of the whole Varnashram culture. There's no culture, practically speaking, now. So that's why this is going on. Generally speaking, you see there's a nucleus of the village, and then and generally in the Indian villages you'll find there's a nucleus. All the houses are in one place, and the lands are all around.
Everyone has to have their plot of land.
It's all in various places around the village, kind of radiating out.
Just a brief comment on that. Actually, there are in the Vedic literatures, and that's one of our major shortcomings. We have not properly or sufficiently studied, there are specific modules. Just like, for example, we read in the Battle of Kurukshetra, you know, in Mahabharata, how the different formations were there, isn't it? Different names were there also describing different kinds of formation to attack or to defend. So within, this is all connected actually with Vastu also. Like our village community in Indonesia has a combination of both immediate land. For example, every home is within a maybe quarter acre of land, or it's like 50 by 25 meters. And then the whole village is made like this. The plots are all the same. Means that one can grow one's immediate food practically just around the house. At the same time, that whole village area is within a geographical area which is surrounded by larger piece of land also. So there are different modules, so to speak, and but generally we are less acquainted or not knowing about them. But that's one of the reasons it's important for some of our devotees to know about these things, so that when we begin to implement, like our village community, we were fortunate, one of our devotees who's a temple president for a temple near Jakarta, Puncak, he had studied architecture, and he, you know, when he was in Bali, and so he has since studied on his own about Vastu, and so he helped to set up the whole, you know, okay, you have 100 acres, 150 acres of land, 20 or 50 is going to be for the village area, and it's going to be divided in this way, and the houses are going to be facing this way, so many things. You know, it's all there actually in the Shastra, including the point you're asking about what is better. There are different factors. All of these things are based on different factors, which people who are in knowledge, you know, that's why we need to consult with such persons. I believe in order to continue here, we had mentioned earlier how Harsha will be speaking about one aspect of this, let's say, organization which we have set up to promote Varnashrama, and specifically this is referred to or called the Varnashrama Research Team. So since Harsha has been involved from the very beginning of this group, then he can explain to us who they are and what they're doing, what are some of their activities, and then we can have a few minutes for questions as well afterwards.
Just Hare Krishna. As Maharaj was mentioning, we have a Varnashram research team just started actually around 6 months back, and truly doesn't qualify to be here presenting as a major team or something, but since Varnashram itself is a very nascent thing in our movement at present, having such teams even 6 months would mean something really positively doing in these issues. It was 6 months back, somewhere around August. We were very fired up, some few boys, they're all here, few of them actually. We wanted to do something about cow protection very seriously, and we wrote mails to Maharaj, and we were in conversation with senior devotees like Harikirtan Prabhu, Madhav Prabhu and others, and we were getting guidance. And as I was mentioning earlier also, that we wanted to publish some articles and do something about documentary and so on and so forth. So we wrote a mail to Maharaj that we are going to, this is what we are thinking. And Maharaj encouraged a lot, and few mails, and third mail came with 30 books to be prepared relating Varnashrama, like how to produce your own food, how to produce your own soap, how to make your own oil, how to make your own so on and so forth. So there were 30 books that we had to make, and we were like surprised. Maharaj is pushing us. So then we immediately had a small meeting with whatever few members we had, and we started discussing this, how it started. And within 6 months, nothing really great, but I would say something has been done which we can share, and then probably it could be models for such teams focusing on Varnashram. So here I would just make few comments and few points on strategic planning, etc., just to give a background to what Varnashram such team can actually do, and then we can come to how our team is working at present, can work as a model. This is Srila Prabhupada on strategic planning. So I'll just read in one of the mails in correspondence with Maharaj. Maharaj had mentioned there is a team in US just recently started, maybe a year or two back, by Gopal Bhatta Prabhu, and they were very seriously working on how to foster this Krishna consciousness movement in a new dimension, and they had referred to Gopal Bhatta Prabhu's experience in strategic planning and so on and so forth. So a lot of discussions had gone into that, and there is a website also, spiritualstrategicplanning.com. So these are the extracts from that. This was told by Giriraj Maharaj. Srila Prabhupada was in Vrindavan then, and we didn't know how long he would be with us. So he was so weak, he would just lie on his bed and speak only with great difficulty. We felt only any word Srila Prabhupada uttered might be his last. One night I was sleeping on the roof of Gurukula building, and around midnight one devotee woke me up. "Prabhupada is calling you, Prabhupada is calling." Immediately I got up and went down to Srila Prabhupada's room. I didn't know what to expect. Why did Srila Prabhupada call me? What did he want to say? The silent intensity in Prabhupada's room heightened my anticipation. Is he going to give his final instruction? Srila Prabhupada was laying in an internal state of consciousness. I waited in silence. Finally, Prabhupada asked me, "Do you think this moment will go on without me?" I replied, "As long as we are sincere and chant Hare Krishna and follow the regulative principles, the moment will go on, Srila Prabhupada." Srila Prabhupada listened. Then again, with great difficulty and ever so softly, Srila Prabhupada responded. He uttered the words organization and intelligence. I was really startled, but later I considered the significance of Srila Prabhupada's pragmatic reply. Although sincerely chanting 16 rounds and following the regulative principles are the basis of Krishna consciousness, intelligence and organization are also required, especially to spread Krishna consciousness and fulfill Srila Prabhupada's and Lord Krishna's mission. This is how they give a brief to their whole effort on strategic planning to spread Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada stressed two things, that is planning and organization. So just to give a brief, what exactly is this strategic planning? Of course it's very theoretical, but just to give an idea what exactly it is. Strategic planning is a tool widely used by governmental, educational, philanthropic, religious and business organizations to take themselves through a process of transformation and growth in a rational, coherent and unified manner. They use it for all demoniac purposes. It's a tool. So, contemplating on Prabhupada's very important words, intelligence, organization and cooperation, which will form a teamwork. And strategic planning is possible only in a team, not an individual. Vision is possible by an individual, whereas to execute that, strategic planning is possible only by a team. That's how we thought of, and Maharaj was made a charter of what Varnashram research team should do. This is a small quote from Alice in the Wonderland, written by Lewis Carroll. Alice is asking, "Would you tell me please which way I ought to go from here?" The cat is replied, "That depends a good deal on where you want to get to." "I don't much care where." "Then it doesn't matter which way you go," said the cat. So this just gives a gist of how strategic planning is done and how it actually comes down to what we need to do right now. So considering this is an emergency, okay, this is an emergency, this is the vision, and okay, then what has to be the objective, and then right now what we are supposed to do is short term, long term, etc., etc., which will be clear next. So there is a vision, there is a mission, objectives, goals, targets, and there is a feedback to the vision. It's theoretical. For example, considering a hospital or an organization which is giving healthcare, providing healthcare. Vision is advanced life care. Say they want to give advanced life care to the people. So how to execute this vision? There's a mission to develop niche in the organ transplantation market. OT is organ transplantation. So say they want to give this advanced life care as a tertiary hospital and so on and so forth. So they want to, this is an example of the hospital where currently I am associated. Specific, yeah, monopoly, I mean specialization in organ transplantation market. This is an example, that's it. objectives to execute this mission to perform successful organ transplantation. Very crudely formed, these statements, I am not going in detail. I mean, this is just to give an idea, that's it. So these are the objectives we have to perform successful organ transplantations. Then what is the goal? There could be two goals, long-term and short-term goal. Long-term, we'll perform 50 organ transplantations. Short-term, we'll provide these many specialties. We'll introduce this technology, so on and so forth. Target, say, within 2 years, we need to have 50 organ transplantations. So they have used this tool and trying to make strategic planning. Let us see our, probably, just to give an idea again. Vision is to realize Varnashrama Dharma. Mission to make Vrindavan villages. Okay, how do we do it? Again, this is also crudely formed. We can actually go in more details and actually come out with a model. First is to make models, then everybody will practically we can make this. Make Varnashram colleges, that's very important, and Gurukuls. Make Varnashram labs, etc., etc. Labs means to experiment traditional technologies. Goals could be short term and long term. We can actually cut down, step by step what we can do. We can even keep some targets. Let us come out with the Varnashram college by 2009. Let us come out with, let us start living in the village by 2009. And let us come out with a documentary by 2007. That's old thing. So we can actually do some planning. And as I said, it happens only in a team. So our Varnashram research team started working in these basic principles and guidelines given by senior devotees. So, since just 6 months of its involvement, I was actually understanding why Maharaj is pushing this. Then can only think of one point, that this in future can become a case for future entities, just like the Indonesian example, where youth hostel devotees went to the village and then formed a community there. Similarly, such a system can be formed. But why, what exactly is this Varnashram search team and etc., I will just briefly go into these things. Not everything is covered in detail, but I will just explain some of the things. VRT is Varnashram research team. And why is this Varnashram search team required? Probably this is one of the main purpose, is to make Varnashram shift possible for the youth. It could be a youth movement, Varnashram research team, or any other name can be called, primarily to push the Varnashram mission very widely. There are other youth movements, BYS, Bhaktivedanta Youth Services, ISKCON Youth Forum, mainly preaching on Krishna conscious aspect, spiritual aspect. But when it comes to Varnashram research team, can actually completely focus on the fourth wave, that is how we can actually come out with these traditional technologies, how we can actually introduce ourselves to village environment, and how it is important that we understand this is the fourth wave, and we have to actually execute this mission of Prabhupada. Just to give a brief, which will be also covered later part on Glovesco, there could be continental Glovesco coordinators, national coordinators, regional coordinators, but Varnashram research teams in every city can be formed, where we have more than five who have some varied skills and start working on various projects, which we can we have as a get involved pick your seva list, where we have, you know, written down some of the sevas that we can actually get into, which are preliminary to actually getting into the farm. So something like this Varnashram Sesh team could do. There is a farm community already existing in a village, and you know, a village community is already existing. A Varnashram Sesh team, let us not conclude here that Varnashram Sesh team will be based in city only. It can be based in the farm also. So what this Varnashram Sesh teams will do is they will coordinate with these communities, get the feedback, understand things. They'll coordinate with the temples and the congregation. Varnashram colleges, they need to coordinate. And a lot of NGOs out there doing a lot of things, they need to coordinate with them. They need to learn a lot. They need to exchange information, share, disseminate the information. And there will be a Varnashram preaching wing, could be, where it will go and preach and, you know, collect funds, or it will preach and recruit members. All this is still not as a system at present, but slowly taking shape, I would say, definitely. Mainly this Varnashram Sesh team, as I was mentioning, once we wrote a mail that we are writing an article, we got a reply from Maharaj, 30 books are there to be written. So, and also a guideline on core research, core writers and allied services we thought of. Core writers is to start working on these books, and core researchers is to start collecting information, compile information, and then put them into a module, educational module, which will be like Varnashram college. There is already a Bhaktivedanta Varnashram library that we have set up, which is growing in its collections. Varnashram lab, I will explain, come to that later. Library could be virtual library. Already we have a good collection of virtual library. Physical library is like periodicals and books. Books we have, periodicals we are slowly getting subscriptions. Virtual library is like having a website bank. All websites related to Varnashram, and that will help in these production of these books and etc. etc. There could be a huge website bank. We already have started this website bank. And digital library, video and audio documents. We are in discussion of having a Varnashram tape ministry, which will collect all Varnashram related audios, videos, etc. And core researchers, there will be so many wings. This is just, you know, limitation of this presentation. Agricultural wing, crop protection wing, martial arts wing, etc., etc. All this is not possible immediately with 10, 15 or 5, you know, devotees in the team. But this is the vision that can be, you know, executed. We have few of these. As I said, not fully set up. It's just 6 months we are in this line. Co-writers like compilers, editors, language, content, proofreaders, translators. Till recently this was not very clearly set, but when we went through the marathon recently to produce Varnashram education book, and Global Varnashram, which will also be released soon, so we could find out exactly who could be editors, who could be proofreaders, who could be translators, etc. I will introduce all the members who are all present here. Allied services could be layout designers, publishers, distributors, communications wing, updation, website is another major thing, and so on and so forth. VRT, as I was just mentioning about the youth movement, is a practical base for youth to get introduced to Varnashram. It educates, involves, implements and preaches younger generations about Varnashram Dharma. It's just those who didn't get opportunity to go into Gurukul or Varnashram college and come out into farm communities, Varnashram research team will help in the cities to introduce the existing youths to Varnashram related issues. It involves with IYF and BYS in its preaching programs and acts as a ground to for get involved opportunities. Just a brief difference, or you could say where how it coordinates. Varnashram research team specialized in get involved activities, whereas BYS or IYF is specialized in preaching activities. So it's like preaching, and this is where implementation. More of sevas, lot of sevas will be there in Varnashram research team. One can directly get introduced to Varnashram research team and then get into for actual learning of Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam and so on and so forth, can go into BYS programs and learn them, and also learn here also while producing books and so on and so forth. So it's like this, just simple diagram I had thought of. That's it about Varnashram Sesh team. I would like to introduce who are all involved here at present. Sriram Prabhu, who is operating camera for lot of sevas there. If there's no, you know, lot of sevas involved, each one is involved in. Nitya Tripta Prabhu here, and Ramu Prabhu, then Nishkinchan Prabhu. We have Lakshman Prabhu and Nareshwar Prabhu there, all in Sikandarabad. And this side from Delhi, for the documentary we got various help. We got Muslims interview on cow protection and lot of things from Delhi. So we were discussing of having Varnashram research team in Delhi, and few boys with leadership of Vipul Prabhu already started discussing, and they have tried to come out with some details. This is Vipul Prabhu, Dr. Vipul from Delhi, and Ras Mandal Prabhu, our editor, and guidance we received from Madhav Prabhu and Harikirtan Prabhu. And lot more are there who have not been able to participate here. We have at least 25 members at present, and growing numbers. We had some, just to brief how many programs we had. We had a village program. We went to a village, three village programs, especially where the one which I could attend was, we went to a village and started connecting, you know, we did a Nagar Sankirtan to begin. Just like four waves. First we did Nagar Sankirtan, then we there was a very beautiful temple there in the village. So we, after Nagar Sankirtan, we entered into the temple, and many came behind us, small boys and lot of old and young. So that was temple entry. Then we had just a discussion. It's not initiation, of course. Just some nice small Bhagavatam we could read, a verse of Bhagavad Gita we read, and everybody was enjoying it. And we had initiation, and then later we had questionnaire, cows and agriculture. We just gave, we had some in local language, we had made some questionnaires, how do you feel this and what all this. Lakshman Prabhu could explain more.
So it was on Sunday, so around 15 devotees we all could go to a village nearby Hyderabad, around 30 kilometers. And we did, as Prabhuji said, Nagar Sankirtan and Prasadam distribution. And the questionnaire was like, what they do with the cows, and how many of them are having cows, and what is the agriculture, what kind of agriculture they are doing. And it, like, almost, as Madhav Prabhu mentioned, they are not doing any traditional or Vedic agriculture. Just they are doing mechanized farming, which, because of which they are all in losses and there are failure. So most of the youth, if I can say like in a village 100 people are saying of about age 20 to 30 years, you can find 5 of them in the village and rest all of them are in the towns work doing some job, or they will be traveling from this place to town, city, Hyderabad city, daily morning and evening. It takes around 2 to 3 hours to travel, and with so much health problems and other issues they are raising what to do and how can they actually, they are looking for some suggestions. The if we enter the frequently and visit those kind of places regularly, I think we can just do what Maharaj wants and what Prabhupada wants. Thank you very much.
Of course, this is nowhere near to what Varnashram is supposed to be doing there, but this is a very slow approach, of course, really very slow. And this is just to understand ourselves. We were actually understanding how this whole thing is working and how Varnashram is going to happen. I mean, we can't immediately just jump into village and start there. So to ourselves make condition to that kind of a thing, we were just working out to get used to such things. We let us visit some villages, understand the whole thing, practically just see the situation, and we also get becomes more serious. One day we will be living there. So this is how Varnashram such team, what we had thought was at present still in the metamorphosis. We also did one Varnashram retreat. We called it a Varnashram retreat program, just like yoga retreat programs in the temples. We called it a Varnashram retreat program. New Naimi Sharanya farm, which Prabhupada had envisioned, and it was there, many acres of land, now very few acres of land left there, is having a very beautiful temple in Mechal. And we also have Goshala containing around 20-30 cows. So we had Sri Ram Prabhu's office. There were very young boys, very interested in social work, and we also explained that, you know, Sri Ram Prabhu explained, we had a lot of social programs. We are very seriously involved in many social programs and so on and so forth. So we went for a Varnashram retreat program and had a very successful 30 boys attended. That's another program to mention. I'll stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
We're going to have a 10-minute break now. And
we will come back at 12 o'clock and we'll continue. And we've got two papers here we need everyone to fill out before you leave at lunchtime. So we'll hand these out. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.